The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Time now for the Teisho. Always on retreat in the late morning. Some of us blab on for some length of time about this infinitely subtle Dharma. And this morning, Bob Sensei and I will have the honor of disgracing ourselves to the best of our ability, because, of course, it can't be spoken of. But yet, still, you have to say something. Each one of us has to say something, has to meet our life. So I'll start, and then Bob will come in. We're discussing on this retreat, we've chosen case number 28 from the Gateless Gate. The Lung Tan, renowned far and wide, is the title often given to it. It's quite a long koan, one of these stories that has many parts. And as I've been looking into it over the past few days, also noticed that not only is the koan long, but the koan begins in the middle of the story, as these koans sometimes do. And Wu Men, the collector of the Gateless Gate, the Wu Men Guan, in the 12th century, he added a long commentary when he collected these stories from most of them said in the 9th, 8th, and 9th century. When he collected the stories, he added a commentary to each one and also a verse. Oftentimes the commentary is quite short, but in this particular one, the commentary is much longer because the commentary is the prequel, I guess. So just to introduce the characters of the story, main character in the story is Daishan. Daishan is the central figure in a number of koans, maybe six or seven in the different collections. He became quite a great and renowned teacher. But this is the first we hear of him when he was a young man and a student. And he began as a Buddhist scholar, apparently was very precocious. Entered the monastery at a young age and studied and wrote and became a renowned expert in the Diamond Sutra. He was also a very arrogant young man, and he heard there were some people practicing Buddhism in the south of China that were doing it wrong. He went down to set them straight. And this is the story of him going down. I suppose, as it often happens, we think we're going to change or need to change someone else, and then we find out where the problem really is, if we're lucky, and begin to look inward and change ourselves. In his travels to the south, he encounters two Zen teachers. One he recognizes, and one he does not recognize. The one he does not recognize is an old tea woman at a tea hut who he has an encounter with. And this encounter is related in Wu Men's comment. So I'm going to start with Wu Men's comment. Before we get, he goes on to have an encounter with a Zen teacher, Lung Tan. But But the setup feels equally important, or maybe more important. And our Zen tradition is so heavily weighted, our stories, so many about men encountering men and all of their antics. But certainly women have been a part of this tradition from the beginning, and maybe slowly we're beginning to appreciate this more. So I'll read, this is Wu Men's comment on case 28. He says, until he'd gone through the gateway and left his homeland, Daishan was a mind seething with zeal, a mouth aching to speak out. Full of grand ambitions, he came to these southlands on a mission to eradicate our doctrine of transmission outside the teaching. And this was the Zen teaching that still persists, that there is a transmission that is beyond words and letters, a transmission outside the teaching. When Daishan reached Revere Land Road, he ordered a mind kindle bun from an old woman at a shop. So this is, there's a play on words. Apparently there actually was a bun. I guess it's a proto Oreo, perhaps, that was called a mind refresher bun, or a mind kindle bun. So he ordered one of these, from the old woman at the tea shop. Great Daishan, what's all that stuff there in your cart? All those books and papers, said the shopwoman. My writings from the Diamond Sutra, notes and commentaries, replied Daishan. Like it says in your sutra, the old shopwoman continued, mind of the past cannot be realized. Mind of the present, a glimmer, cannot be realized. Mind of the future cannot be realized. Great Daishan, which mind is it you want to kindle and set ablaze? Daishan, which mind is it you want to kindle and set ablaze? With that single question, Daishan was dumbfounded. He stood there like a puppet with its mouth hanging open. Even so, he was too proud to find death in an old shopwoman's words. So he asked her, who is it that teaches Chan around here? Lung Tan, up the road just 2 miles, she replied. Daishan set out for Lung Tan's monastery, and when he arrived, his blunders completely ruined him. All that he had once said, he now contradicted. And it was Lung Tan, so full of fatherly love for a son, that he felt no shame. Seeing a little spark of flame smoldering in Daishan, he grabbed a bucket of rancid water in a wild frenzy and drowned him with it, destroyed him absolutely. Find a place of quiet solitude. From there, you'll see it's all a grand ruse and farce. So this is the prequel. This is Wu Men weaving his own story, perhaps weaving 2 stories together about Daishan. But Daishan leaves his home and brings everything with him. So many places to enter here, but this leaving home and bringing our cart full of books and commentaries, our cart full of opinions, so often how we go into the world. And we enter in the world oftentimes to set the world straight. There's a problem, and the problem is clearly out there. If only I can get those people to stop what they're doing, I'll be fine. But as I have been looking into this over the past few days, I'm also quite impressed with Daishan. He's not described as particularly promising for Zen, but full of grand ambitions. He came to these Southlands on a mission to eradicate the Zen doctrine of transmission outside of teaching. He set forth, he left his homeland. And I think in our Zen path, on our Zen path, this setting out is the most important thing. In one way, we could say that we're always setting out in the wrong direction. Our practice is always tainted with self-interest. Our reasons for practicing are always to some degree about the ego, wanting to be a good Zen student, wanting to have something we think we don't have. So we are always mistaken from the very beginning. And the wonderful news is that this is not a problem. We set out, and even setting out in exactly the wrong direction, setting out with delusion within delusion. When we set out, we will encounter the teaching. Oftentimes this teaching will dumbfound us, and we will be unable to receive what is so generously offered, and we will continue looking. But this great energy of our practice to set out moment after moment, breath after breath, in this we follow Daishan's footsteps, which we will follow through Bob's words now.
So David has lovingly invited me to blab on, and he's given us the prequel, and I will read the koan. Lung Tan, renowned far and wide. Daishan visited Lung Tan and questioned him sincerely far into the night. It grew late, and Lung Tan said, "Why don't you retire?" Daishan made his bows and lifted the blinds to withdraw, but he was met by darkness. Turning back, he said, "It is dark outside." Lung Tan lit a paper candle and handed it to Daishan. Daishan was about to take it when Lung Tan blew it out. At this, Daishan had sudden realization and made bows. Lung Tan said, "What truth did you discern?" And Daishan said, "From now on, I will not doubt the words of an old priest who is renowned everywhere under the sun." The next day, Lung Tan took the high seat before his assembly and said, "I see a brave fellow among you monks. His fangs are like a sword tree. His mouth is like a blood bowl. Give him a blow and he won't turn his head. Someday he will climb the highest peak and establish our way there." Daishan brought his notes on the Diamond Sutra before the Dharma Hall, and he held up a torch, saying, "Even though you have exhausted the abstruse doctrines, it is like placing a hair in vast space. Even though you have learned all the secrets of the world, it is like letting a single drop of water fall into an enormous valley." And he burned up all his notes. Then, making his bows, he took leave of his teacher. And I will finish this reading Lauren's verse, Wu Man writes, seeing the face is better than hearing the name. Hearing the name is better than seeing the face. He saved his nose, but alas, he lost his eyes. Such a rich story. And the prequel is so essential because here is Deshan feeling like he has so much that he knows, that he is sure of, and that he needs to teach the world. And so he makes his pilgrimage sure that he's going to set everybody straight about how you attain the way, about how you attain realization. He believed he needed to stamp out certain foolish ideas and enlighten us all. This begs for us to remember Suzuki Roshi's famous teaching. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. Deshan was an expert in the Diamond Sutra. He gave talks about it all over China. How many of us live in this world? In the world where the big prize goes to the one who knows, to the one who has the most commentaries written, to the one who's always right and never wrong. And of course, he meets the old woman and he asks, is there anyone teaching Zen around here? When, of course, what's right in front of him is brilliant Zen teaching. How do we meet the world when it shows up to teach us? Is the heart mind open to hear it and see it when a teacher emerges? The cat on the windowsill, the dead leaves blowing in the yard. When are we ready to meet the teaching that's always calling to us? Deshan wasn't able to realize the brilliance of the teacher who stood before him, the woman, but he was able to realize her wisdom. And suddenly the expert understood that he was a beginner. And so our koan opens with Deshan really sincerely questioning the old Roshi long into the night. And the old Roshi gets tired and says, okay, time for bed. And here's the most poignant scene of the koan, where Deshan turns, goes to leave, sees that there's darkness and turns back saying, it's dark outside. What a poignant statement for all of us. It is dark outside. It's dark inside. So much out there that we don't know, that we are beginners at encountering in every moment, whether it's something big like the pandemic or something small like my angry little comment about myself this morning as I brushed my teeth. But what Deshan saw so clearly was that there was no path, no clear path. And he said to his teacher, it's dark out there. So why does Lung Tan offer him the candle? What does he hope to do? And why does he blow it out? Is this a trick? Is this a bait and switch? Or is this, in fact, a profoundly generous teaching. Our way is just this. It's seeing the darkness. It's feeling the fear. It's watching the candle blow out. And what we realize when we drink our tea, when we sit, when we walk, may come gradually, may come quickly, but it all comes from the experience of just this. And of course, that is what Lung Tan was so generously offering to this young expert monk. Deshan says that he'll no longer doubt the words of an old priest renowned far and wide. And there are two ironies in that statement. First of all, the renowned far and wide, that expert status, that so narrows our sense of the possible, our sense of what's here right now. And that Deshan says, I'll no longer doubt the words of my old teacher. But what his teacher gave him and pointed to was experience that touched the heart mind. So then Deshan marches into the hall the next morning with all of his notes, all of his commentaries, years of work. And again, he's certain. He says, this is not it. And he burns up all of his years of work. And I was thinking, gosh, no one gave Deshan the cautions that we often give each other when we finish Sixing, when we say, don't make any quick decisions. Don't get that tattoo immediately. Think about changing your job. No one told this to Deshan, so he right away took years of work and burned it up and said, this is not it. And I think what's so poignant here is that Deshan moves from certainty, from expert status, into that beginner's place where he sincerely questions and wants to know and looks into the darkness. And then he moves back into a place of certainty. And this is so much what happens to us in our lives. We move back and forth from certainty to doubt, from expert to beginner, from not knowing to knowing. This is a koan that invites us into just a few moments in the deep practice of a young man about to become a Zen master. We watch him move between realization and delusion and back to realization. And we watch ourselves here over these days move from clarity to confusion, from knowing to not knowing, from thinking and strategizing to just this. And this koan invites us to appreciate the dance, to play with it, to know it in its fullness, and to never allow ourselves to get stuck in any one place, to live into what we're expert at, what we're beginners at, and live into the fullness of each moment of our life. Thank you.
So I invite you to sit at ease, turn toward the screen if you can, and we'll have a Dharma dialogue. Bob and I will respond. So just raising your Zoom hand with what struck you, what made sense, what didn't make sense. questions or observations about this story and our work here together? Chad.
Thank you for the talk. It was kind of overwhelming. like it felt like there were so many emotions that kind of welled up, right? In the sense of like all the things that we go through life or that I go through life thinking that I know, or this defense mechanism that we build and I build around myself with my knowledge and what I do and my work and all those things. And then you kind of get pushed back and you see the vastness of the universe and how little that I am in that whole thing. And it's sort of like, well, what's the point? Like, and then it kind of carries you back or carried me back to this point of, well, that's okay. And so, yeah, I am this tiny little speck in the universe and I know a few things, but there's so many other things I don't know. And that weird dichotomy of like how I think of myself, right? And try to push that aside a bit to not get stuck in it. And it was, yeah, it's a little overwhelming, I think, was sort of how I left.
You know, it's for me, it's easy to get stuck on one side of this koan, the side of, oh, you know, commentary is bad, sudden realization good, that's what I'm after, that's what I'm going to get. And, you know, as you say so beautifully, Chad, there are things you know, there are things you are expert at, and that too is a gift to the world, a really important one. Mm. I bet there was really wonderful, rich material in those commentaries of Deshan's, but we'll never know. So thank you for calling out this fact that we really are both expert and beginner and need to honor both.
And I think in this story, Chad, it also points to the necessity and the richness of these moments when it all kind of falls apart. Like we construct these lives that are as good as we can make them and aligned. And then at some point for all of us, we encounter a tea woman, right? And suddenly all of our competence and all of our great work falls apart. And it is from this falling apart that we can sincerely ask questions and that can move into this wonderful realization beyond what we can imagine. So thanks, Chad. Bill.
Yeah, hi. yeah, I agree completely with Chad. What an overwhelming koan. And what struck me first of all in the koan was Deshan sitting in the dark corner with a bucket of rancid water on him in grand delusion and farce. And I'm thinking, God, I spent so much time in that. but not for his reason of being overly sort of confident, but on the other side of things, thinking that I'm not really worthy, you know, at least parts of not most of the time. Right. So that struck me. And I love the way it ended too with Deshan going back into the sort of world of delusion after having burned his notes. And it's good to know this not always ending with a happy ending with full enlightenment for everyone.
Yeah, I love these images, and part of the power of these koans are these images. And I think part of the gift of our Chan roots in China are these stories. Yeah, so this was actually written down 400 years after Deshan was walking the earth. So these stories are actually the wisdom of generations of telling and retelling, and this bucket of rancid water. How many of us know that place? And to have that recognized, as you say, kind of me too. Because so often we think whatever is going on with us is clearly the wrong way. And there must be some other better way. And interesting how we keep circling around the judge, you know, in our dialogues and what we're doing. Really appreciating that. And the going on a little further in the story. So not only does he burn his notes, he said, I've got it. I'm leaving my teacher. I don't need anything anymore. And wanders away. And later on, it's said that he comes back to Lung Tan and studies for 30 years with his teacher. Right. So, this going back, losing it, coming back, all of this. Yeah. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Esther.
So, David, there was a sentence with the woman in the tea shop, right? Yeah. Said something to him. And then there was a sentence around something about unable or not wanting to face the death. What was the sentence?
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? With that single question, Deshan was dumbfounded. He stood there like a puppet with its mouth hanging open. Even so, he was too proud to find death in an old shopwoman's words.
Right. And so this word of death, you know, I get curious around what is it that we do as we stand in those moments. And there's something that surprises us and turns us around. And do we go to asking a clever question, you know, linking back to our truth, or what is it that we do there? Practicing taking that death on and perhaps not saying a word.
Right.
And so there was something there that touched me and inspired me.
Mm.
What is it we do in those places?
Yeah. Well, and for me, it's very much about whether we can see and what he can't do in that moment is see who's before him. This wonderful, wise person, right? And it's because of the story he's been telling himself that's about to crumble, that is starting to crumble. But oh no, if I see who's before me, my story goes away. Who am I? And so I think it's often in those moments when we are most profoundly challenged about who we are that it's very difficult to be able to experience what's right in front of us.
And it's also bypassing being touched. You know, perhaps something very deep in him was touched, and then we resort to a clever question. Or, where is the authority?
Yeah, right. Yeah, thank you, Esther. Craig.
I could really relate to Deshan when the candle blew out, because I come to teachers and I'm wanting you to hand me a flashlight that is going to illuminate that darkness for me and ease my way through my confusion. And you guys are always turning the flashlight off and saying, you're going to find your own way through that darkness. And so, like Deshan, I want to cling to the teachings and cling to the teachers and you keep telling me, no, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful part of this image. And we so imagine that someone else, and certainly a Zen teacher, must have the light for us. And such a lovely story of that longing and that desire. And then what can happen in that darkness, in that moment, where we see there is no light, be a light unto yourself, the Buddha. Yeah. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Aaron.
Just wanted to share some of my reactions to listening to the koan. I guess one was feeling like all that time he spent doing these readings or learning these teachings, and how that must have had some value for him, and to come to this point of, you know, realizing, well, maybe this isn't everything, and this is really nothing. And then I guess another reaction I had was when he was burning his papers, I thought, well, that's kind of admirable, because he's saying, well, this isn't really the truth, but at the same time, it feels kind of overly dramatic somehow.
Yeah.
Just to me.
Well, Aaron, I think what you're pointing out is so true, that of course there must have been some value in what he wrote. There must have, and this drama of, oh, now I've got it. That's a drama that I experience on my cushion often. Like, oh, now I know how to practice. I'm just going to do this for the rest of my life and everything's going to be fine. And as much as I know that's not true, sometimes I catch myself doing it anyway. And I think that's what Deshaun was experiencing in that moment, this kind of realization that he thought was the last word of Zen. And of course, there is no last word of Zen. There is no final step on this path. Thank you.
And I think also, Aaron, so important, this valuing what has come up to this point. I think sometimes people say, oh, I wish I'd started Zen when I was younger, or I wish I hadn't this or that. And I think part of our practice as it matures, so clearly Deshaun has a great insight. He gets this great story written. But clearly he has a long way to go. And some of that is valuing everything. So I don't think anything that's wasted. Whatever you have been through in your life, you may say, oh, that was terrible. That was a wasted time, but it was exactly what you needed. And this kind of redeeming of our past, or accepting and appreciate it, doesn't mean we want to keep doing it, or there may be other choices we make, but to in some ways bow down to the work we did, because it got you here. Whatever it is you've done, all of the successes and failures, each one exactly necessary to be here. So really appreciate you pointing that out. Yeah. Thank you. Jeannie.
So there's a line in this koan that always gets me. It's the part when his teacher goes in, you know, on his high seat and praises Doshan, you know? Mm-hmm. And I never get that. I never get that. You know, is he really praising him? Is he hooking Doshan? You know, he gets that this guy really likes being a big shot, you know, either through his writings, now through this great revelation. So he's hooking him again, you know, by massaging his ego. I don't get it, because the lines just dropped in there and then nothing after it. So it's a question. If anybody has any thoughts on that.
I think it's a wonderful question. And, you know, part of these studying the koans is noticing when these questions come up. And part of it is, you know, as we dream into these characters, so in one hand, we can always dream some benevolent intention, but also these teachers, just like real Zen masters, don't always do perhaps the most skillful thing. You know, maybe he was hooking. And maybe it was written in later to justify Deshaun's great ascent, you know, so the hero, you write her biography later and you say, from the time she was 4, people knew she would be a great yoga teacher. Yeah, many things, but I think you're exactly right in the emotional impact of that. She's just, he's adding fuel to the fire. and maybe to see if there's more that needs to be burned off. And certainly there was much more that needed to be burned off. Yeah.
You know, and I think, Jeannie, it's really important to honor that question when it comes up, because it's what is this? And to notice what it evokes in you, because it evokes skepticism in you, and what it reminds us of is how there's both the yearning for somebody to be so great, so powerful, so strong, and then the belief of, not really, that superheroes only exist in our imaginations. And so to play that I think these are like ink blots, like Rorschachs almost, that what comes up in us is so important to notice and honor when we look at these lines that jump out at us. So thank you.
I think only someone with swords for fangs and a blood bowl for a mouth would notice that. Pierce.
When I was a kid, one of the other kids asked me the question, where was Goofy when the light went out? And I knew it was a trap. I knew it was a trick question. And I tried to squirm out of it by demanding all this information about Goofy's circumstances. But of course the answer is, as you realize, I'm sure, in the dark. And it seems to me like that question, is related to the koan, and it embodies the approach that koans take, that they direct us away from study and thought and analysis and toward the experience of just being human or just like this. The other thing I want to say is that I'm still like that. This is what happens to me. Even though I have this example before me, I still search for the analytical answer. But also this koan affects me in a way that is very visceral, in that, it doesn't, nowadays it doesn't tend to hook me because there's something being transmitted there. I can almost feel that the light is going to go off when I hear it read, or something like that is going to happen. And for that reason, I always enjoy hearing about it.
Yeah, great. So that may be, I'm going to put that in my collection of modern koans. Where was Goofy when the light?
When the light went out.
Thank you, Pierce. Will.
Thank you to everybody for everything that's been said. As usual, I'm learning from all of it. I wanted to ask if, David, you could reread. What does the tea woman say to him? She asks a question, something about the three minds.
Yeah, so she's referring to the Diamond Sutra teaching of the three minds.
Yeah.
She says, mind of the past cannot be realized. Mind of the present cannot be realized. Mind of the future cannot be realized. So this is from the Diamond Sutra. And then she says, great Deshan, with which mind do you want kindled? Which mind do you want refreshed? Or with which mind will you drink this tea?
So that's one hell of a tea woman. it strikes me that also, I mean, I don't, I haven't studied the Diamond Sutra all the way through, certainly, but I know a little bit about it, and just from what she quotes, it seems to me extraordinary that it's precisely the Diamond Sutra that he is an expert on, because the Diamond Sutra is your mind, the mind should abide nowhere, right? I mean, this is the Diamond Sutra. out of nowhere. And I think it's really, this is, so my investment here is, oh my God, all those precious notes. and I want to, in a certain way, sort of stick up for that, because she's studied the Diamond Sutra. She can quote it.
Right.
That probably wasn't, on the entrance exam for becoming a tea woman. That's something she did on her own time, right? She probably listened to people expounding it, right? One imagines. And he may have done real good. I don't think you can comment on the Diamond Sutra and say things that are completely unhelpful, right? Because you're always talking about the sutra. You're holding it up. So he may actually really have, I guess I'm coming back to that sense that what he burnt up, it's not that it was all wrong, right, necessarily. It might be nice to have those commentaries. And I wonder, I guess my sympathy is with the feeling of regret he may have had afterwards. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that I was so hasty. And I threw out my scholarship, which made me, which was useful to me and to so many people. So, I don't know if that's really a question, but I guess that's the part of it that I, as a scholar, go to.
Well, that's it. Will, I love this because I'm listening to it knowing that you are a professor. And of course, I think that's part of the teaching that we really need to call out, which is there are many ways to realization, and there are many tools that we use. There are many elements that contribute to waking up. And some of those are through the mind road. Even though we're told cut off the mind road, that's just, the mind road is another way. We give these talks, we read, right? All of us read about Zen. So important that we chant. There's so many ways that we come to know just this. And so blowing out the candle, just one way. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. Dawn.
I just wanted to share, I guess, a thought that I have. So I kind of went to the same place that Jeannie went, and also, I guess, Will, the scene where he burns up his stuff and runs out. And I was thinking, too, about, okay, why is the professor or his teacher giving him, appeasing his ego? So what I ended up imagining too is the teacher is saying, here's this great, wonderful person with, swords and fangs, and he's going to be amazing. And then Deshaun just stands up and burns his stuff and runs out and says his thing. And then everybody's like, all right, I don't know what that was about. But anyway, Bob, you did a great job this year, he just gets up and assumes it's him and runs out. It wasn't even, maybe they weren't even going to name him. I don't know, but I don't know why. It just made me giggle to myself out loud, and I just wanted to share it. Yeah.
Well, it's so wonderful because, we can sometimes think that we've escaped ourselves when we're just digging ourselves deeper in the hole, right? And that's actually not a problem. This moment is the koan. So Deshaun, this great certainty he had, this great determination, a terrible problem for him, and his greatest dharma asset. So whatever part of you that gives you the most trouble, how do you appreciate that and use that? And I love this drama happening, and he runs off. Well, yeah, whatever. Let's get on with things here. So great. Thanks, Don. And last comment, Eddie.
Thanks for the talk, David and Bob. So what I'm seeing is a lesson in humility. So many times in my life, I may have offered advice when I probably shouldn't have. And it's one of the, I was just looking, trying to find, there's one of the, readings in the sutra book is about, if someone asks you about Zen, you don't answer them like, I think it's 10 times or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we have this, feeling that we should tell people, you know, but instead of just sometimes listening to what people want to say to you. So, that's what I saw. It was great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so true, Eddie, you know, for all of us. And I love that we're all the people in this story, right? I am the tea woman, the great, teacher, who hides in ordinary life. And we are, Deshan, arrogant and full of ourselves. Let me tell you about Zen, and all of this. So,
and we're all the seven dwarfs, not just Goofy, but Grumpy and Sneezy and Dopey.
That's right. And all right here. So, let's sit with all of ourselves, for a few more breaths, and then we'll, receive instruction, for going on.